Thank you for listening to the Faith Radio Mornings podcast. Enjoy the conversation.
Start your day connecting faith to life with Faith Radio Mornings.
Let it rise.
Good morning, friends. It's 4 minutes after the hour. Welcome to Faith Radio Mornings. As your day is getting started, thanks for flipping on the radio and tuning in to us. It's nice to have you on board. I hope you got a good night's sleep, and I hope you're ready to face the day with great enthusiasm, like myself. I say that with some skepticism, because I'm by nature not a super optimistic person, but I'm trying to be more optimistic each day. And the best way to do that is to open up the book of Psalms for me in the morning. And I read this morning out of Psalm 73. Whom have I in heaven but you? And earth has nothing I desire besides you. My heart and my flesh and my heart may fail, but God is the strength of my heart and my portion forever. That's going to be how I started my day with Psalm 73, starting in verse 25. This is Bill Arnold. So nice to have you with us. I was looking over the list, the top 10 list of things, now that it is Lent, that people are thinking about giving up and putting pressure on themselves to give up. Number one, without a close second, was social networking. That must be something that people feel in over their ears with, just being involved in social networking. Second was chocolate. And then shortly behind chocolate was Twitter. It's like, well, that's kind of social networking too, isn't it? That kind of, yeah, and Rebecca's giving me the big nod. And next up was alcohol, always a good thing to give up. Chips, then swearing, soda, school. I think that's a joke.
No, kids, you can't give up school.
You cannot give up school. Fast foods and then sweets. Those are the top 10 of a survey that I just read. I thought that was interesting. You know, I was reading the paper this morning and finding out that the president and the former president, Obama, and the first lady have just signed a book deal with Random House for upwards of $60 million. It seems like the presidency is a really good job you try to get on the way to a even better job.
Working their way up.
Working their way up. That is quite a windfall to be looking at a $60 million book deal.
That's a million here, a million there. Sooner or later, you're talking about real money.
Yeah, and all of a sudden you kind of go, I'm a millionaire. That's pretty cool. Well, we have a great show today. I'm excited to talk to Karen Swallow Pryor. She's a professor of English at Liberty University. She's written an article that says, I am entertained, therefore I am. And where does entertainment have, what place does it have in the Christian life? Obviously, God said, let's rest on the seventh day, right?
Yes, sir.
So we need to have a little bit of a relaxation, and I think we have to be intentional about it. Otherwise, we can fritter that day away that we're supposed to be resting, busying ourselves with stuff. So we're going to talk to her. We're also going to talk to Kim Cotola. She always has so much great information on the pro-life movement. And do you know, in the last 100 years, there's been 1 billion abortions. That makes me want to start weeping openly. That is so sad. But that's going to be our first hour. We've got a lot planned, so stick around. Don't go anywhere. It's 7 minutes after the hour. So glad you're with us today on Faith Radio Mornings. It's after the hour. Bill Arnold here. Hey, do you have plans this weekend for what you're going to do something fun, a little entertainment? We're kind of living in a culture world of kind of drowning in entertainment. My guest this morning is Karen Swallow Pryor. She's the professor of English at Liberty University. And recently she wrote an article for the National Association of Evangelicals. And she's written an article entitled, I Am Entertained, Therefore I Am. Karen, welcome to the show.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Well, thanks for getting up so early, and thanks for talking about this subject, which I have great affection for because I'm kind of in the biz myself. So let's talk a little bit about how as believers, we can so easily be caught up in the consumption of entertainment, and it may not be necessarily good for us.
Well, it really is easy, isn't it? Because, well, as I say in the article, I mean, there are two things going on here. Number one is that God does tell us to rest. That's part of the order of creation and part of how he made us is that we are to rest and to have recreation. And so it's part of how we're made. But then like most things in our fallen condition, we take something good and we corrupt it and distort it. And so now we are in this situation where we are just surrounded with entertainment every day, everywhere, on our phones, in our living rooms, in our cars. I mean, we cannot even escape entertainment. And we shouldn't try to entirely escape it, but it does put a great responsibility on us to choose wisely and to be intentional about it.
How about when you're pumping gas and there's a little TV screen and they're showing you highlights from some entertainment program of some kind? I mean, we're getting assaulted with it.
Exactly. I mean, we cannot escape it, and yet at the same time, just like food, it doesn't seem as obvious a need as food, but we do need rest and leisure. As I said, that's how God made us, and he commands us to rest and rest our minds. And that doesn't mean we have to choose certain forms of entertainment, but we certainly do need entertainment to a certain extent. We just don't need to overdose on it the way we might some other things that that we take into our bodies.
It was just decades ago that Christians were kind of told to avoid all kinds of stuff, and it probably was good advice back then. You know, I remember reading a book by now deceased Bob Briner, who wrote a book called Roaring Lambs, which said, you know, it was about 30 years ago, Christians were told to get out of the media, get out of news, get out of writing movies and being in the entertainment world. And then he said, let's go roaring back as believers. Let's bring good edifying material and Christian values back into the entertainment environment. And I think that's good advice.
Yeah, I think we're still suffering from that that extreme reaction of retreat. I remember some of that. I remember growing up and having my family, even though we were Christians, weren't like that, but I was around people like that. And I think what we're experiencing now is a pendulum swing in the opposite extreme. We're perhaps being too accepting and too uncritical.
Mm-hmm.
But what, as Christians, I think creation care is our responsibility as stewards, and so is care of culture and entertainment as it pertains to ourselves and the rest of the world. So I think the fact that we retreated has opened up this gap in the entertainment world, and the world stepped in and filled in. And so now if we're going to regain anything in terms of godly entertainment and not just overtly, but just simply glorifying God and glorifying him through the creation he made, we have a lot of work to do. And I think there are artists out there who are doing that, but mm-hmm. we've got a lot to catch up on.
Seems like we've gone in this generation from Father Knows Best to Father Knows Nothing.
Well, yeah, I think possibly so, although even that has, I think there are a lot of, that pendulum has swung a little bit in another direction, and I think we are seeing more sentimental shows
mm-hmm.
and emphasis on family. Like This Is Us is a show that, although I have my own critiques of it, it's a show that's very centered on the family and very sweet. Even sitcoms tend to be family focused and end with a sweet note. But of course, as I say in the article, this is part of the problem, is that Christians have a history of focusing on the message of entertainment and not, you know, the content and not the form or the way that message is communicated. So sometimes these shows that are very sweet and feel good and don't have anything overtly objectionable in them can actually undermine a Christian worldview and worldview thinking in much more subtle ways. So this all goes back to why I'm arguing that we really have to be intentional and critical in what we consume. And it's not always the obvious things that are the most dangerous.
Mm-hmm. It's pretty easy to spend a lot of money real quick if you're trying to find things to do with the family from an entertainment standpoint. Going out and doing stuff is expensive.
Sure. And even if you if you just simply pay the cable bill every month, which is a lot cheaper, there are, that opens up a Pandora's box of all kinds of programming and content that you force you to face some decisions as well.
Mm-hmm.
And not just what is watched, but how much time is spent and phones. I mean, I'm in conversations with parents of teenagers right now about getting their teenagers' phones, and I urge them. My husband teaches high school, and he sees what happens with those phones. And I tell parents, get a cell phone for your child, but don't get a smartphone. We sometimes think it has to be the latest and the greatest, but a cell phone will do, and it won't do the kinds of things a smartphone will do.
Mm-hmm. I remember hearing Bart Simpson say that he watches 7 hours of television a day, 8 if there's something good on.
Wow.
We're going to take a little break. When we come back, we're going to continue to talk about the entertainment business. I'm talking to Karen Swallow Pryor. She's a professor of English at Liberty University. We'll be back in just a minute. It's 16 minutes after the hour. Good morning, everyone. My smart and savvy guest on the line today is Karen Swallow Pryor. She serves as a professor of English at Liberty University. She is the author of Fierce Convictions and Booked Literature in the Soul of Me. Her writing has appeared at Christianity Today, The Washington Post, The Atlantic, The Gospel Coalition, on and on and on. Karen, right before we went to break, we were talking about some of the things that in the entertainment culture that are bad, but then Rebecca, our producer, was talking about some of the subtleties that you had mentioned. What are some of the subtleties we might be looking for? Might not be inherently bad, but subtleties that are pointing towards bad.
There are two sides of that coin. I think what can be bad is simply take something like a lot of the Disney movies, which are seen as, you know, innocent and sweet, and involve princesses and witches and so forth. Now, I don't mean to bash Disney, but many of these films have not just an unchristian or unbiblical worldview, but one that's diametrically opposed to a biblical worldview. So it's important that we be aware that just because a film doesn't contain curse words or scenes of sexuality or excessive violence, that doesn't mean that there aren't things to talk about children with as they watch them and work through them. Talk about the way that love is portrayed. I mean, these movies usually emphasize romantic love in an unrealistic and unbiblical way. And so those are the things to watch for. On the other hand, for adults, I think romantic comedies or chick flicks can send some of the worst messages and set up expectations among women viewers or even men about what love and romance is supposed to be like, and just fill our minds with false visions of what the good life is, and that can create dissatisfaction in this wonderful good world that God has put us in.
That's an excellent point.
On the other
point.
Hand,
yeah, continue.
There are a lot of good films out there and good shows that can be edifying if viewed with a critical mind. And I think, again, we have that pendulum swing where Christians were just not engaged in culture, but God designed us as storytelling creatures. The Bible itself is a narrative that has a beginning, a middle, and an end. We live our days as stories, as things are happening to us throughout the day. We remember those things as a story. So when we get home at the end of the day and we share with our loved ones what our day was like, we often tell that in the form of a story. So we are wired to desire and respond to and relate to the world through story. So video games often they're part of a story. So even our most popular forms of entertainment beyond films and television, and let's not forget good old reading, are stories. Newspapers are written in the form of stories. Fake news, which is entertaining, is entertaining not only because of the story that it tells, but because of how it fits into a larger narrative we've already constructed about how we view the world. It happens to be false. But we love stories. That's the sum of it. And so it's important that we recognize that about our nature and immerse ourselves in good and truthful stories, even in our entertainment.
Now, sports. What about sports? Is that considered entertainment or is that a whole different category?
Well, you know, sports is entertainment, and it's something that I don't write about because I don't know anything about it. but
if you'd like to stay on the line for the next 5 hours, I'll tell you about it.
Well, I do know from seeing it in the room when my husband has it on that one of the things that I think is interesting about sports is they do add a lot of the human drama to it. They emphasize the background story of the key players, and I think that's what helps to make sports interesting and entertainment is the story that goes along with it, whether it's the team story or the story of an individual player. And so sports is another form of entertainment that can be used for good or ill, like all others.
Mm-hmm. So tell me what the Priors like to do for entertainment on any given weekend.
Well, I'm usually writing or reading, but when we
so that's working
down
now. Isn't that working?
It is work. It is. That is so true.
Did
and I need to be better
I just nail you?
That.
I think I did.
You did. Yeah. No. My entertainment is to go outside and go running, and but I don't run fast, so it's not really that hard. But generally, we enjoy watching movies, whether at home or in the theater. But I tend to be very picky about the ones that I select simply because there are so many bad ones out there, and to dedicate 2 hours of my time to something that's not well done and not thoughtful is something I'm not willing to do. And so that's something that's the way that we entertain ourselves together is a good film.
Mm-hmm. And I can't imagine because the last good movie I think I saw was Old Yeller. So I'm just trying to think of how often really good movies come up. Do you go to classics? What do you do as a family of believers that want to watch really edifying stories? Do you have to dig into the classics, or do you find enough contemporary movies to watch?
Well, it's a combination of both, but I actually think that there have been a number of excellent films out in recent months, so many that I haven't been able to see them. So, for example, Senses, which is a dramatization of a play by August Wilson about an African-American family in the early 20th century that went through some difficult times, a beautiful story of pain and struggle with redemption at the end. Loving, which is a film about an interracial marriage here in Virginia, where I live, that went to the Supreme Court and made it struck down laws making it illegal for a black person and white woman to be married. Arrival, a film about really the role of language that occurs in the setting of aliens landing on the planet. Very thoughtful, interesting film. So I think it's important that I don't watch films without reading the criticism, or at least I try not to read too much. I don't like spoilers, but to see what the critics are saying, respected good critics that I know, because again, I don't want to waste my time or money without watching something that's well done.
Karen, we just have about a minute left, but as we're watching anything that's comedically driven, and you've got your kids in the room, and they're laughing at stuff that's making you cringe. Do you ever look for opportunities like that to say maybe that we need to rethink why that's funny, and is it ever an opportunity to then coach them about why that might not be funny?
Oh, I think that entertainment provides wonderful opportunities to talk with kids about the things that are on the screen, but also, I mean, those are always connected to what's going on in real life around them. So I think it's important to be talking with one another through these things, not only what's funny, but just why someone like something? Like, what do you like about that?
Mm-hmm.
Because we can shape our desires. Just like some of us crave junk food all day long, it takes effort, it takes work, but we can cultivate desires, better desires, good desires for things that that are healthy for our minds as well as our bodies.
I agree. Karen, thank you so much for coming on the program this morning. Loved your insight. It is 27 minutes after the hour. We'll take a little break and be right back on Faith Radio Mornings. Thanks for being with us today. All right, here's what I want first thing in the morning. God's Word. Here's Psalm 73, verse 25, 26. Whom have I in heaven but you? And earth has nothing I desire besides you. My flesh and my heart may fail, but God is the strength of my heart and my portion forever. So now with that in mind, we'll go into the news. When we come back, we're going to talk to Kim Cotola. Always a pleasure on Thursdays. Good morning, everyone. So glad you're with us. Be back in a minute. Lent is a season of self-reflection. Author and speaker Jane Rubietta recommends taking a fresh look at how we make decisions.
To try and strike some sort of medium, I think if we just start asking ourselves, what will this cost me if I do this? And what will it cost the people I love if I do this? Do I want to pay the price and do I want them to pay the price? We don't think that way. And so if we can start lining that out, oh, this is going to cost me a lot of sleep. Oh, I get cranky when I'm tired. Oh, wow, I don't know if I can pay that price. And I don't know if I can subject my family to that. So that's one of the ways to start trying to pull things back more to the center.
For the full interview with Jane, visit our website at myfaithradio.com. Be back in just a minute with Kim Cotola from Cradle My Heart Radio.
History has shown that when Christians suffer persecution, for the most part, Christianity actually flourishes. This is Jim Garlow. One early church leader wrote, "Torture, grind us to powder. Our numbers increase in proportion as you mow us down." Don't misunderstand me. I would not trivialize or romanticize persecution. It's awful. Persecution and the threat of death will never squelch God's promises to his people. His grace to the righteous and unrighteous, and listen carefully, the accomplishment of his ultimate will. I can't overstate the fact that you and I have the Christian faith today because there were and are people willing to stand firm in the face of torture and death. The very evidence of God's hand to bless the church and the world. Christianity is not a social movement. It's God's plan for the salvation of the world. Stand firm in the faith. This is Jim Garlow.
Thirty-seven minutes after the hour, when I started working here at Faith Radio, they made me a really nice offer. They offered me 1 year of broadcast lessons or a tuna melt sandwich. And I think I made the right decision because that was some good tuna melt. But my guest on the studio line this morning is a very true professional in the Minnesota Radio Hall of Fame, among others. Kim Cotola, welcome to the show.
Darn it, now you've already got me thinking about lunch.
Well, speaking of, I was reading over all the news in the pro-life news this morning that we're going to talk about, and it brought up my morning Pop-Tart, to be honest. It's just unbelievable what we're going to tell the listeners this morning. So let's get started. The research shows that there's been, since 1920, over 1 billion abortions.
It's incredible, isn't it?
It's just unbelievable.
You can't really take it in. And
no.
When the Family Research Council presented this study, which in one aspect of the study took 14 years, another aspect of the research took 20 years. When they released this in January, Bill, they said one of the speakers quoted Joseph Stalin. You know, he was being briefed about the level of starvation that was happening in Russia under his rule. And he said, well, one man begging bread is hunger. A million starving is a statistic, right? And so a billion people missing
Wow.
From the last 100 years. How do we possibly begin to take that in? But one of the findings of this research, again, Family Research Council released this study in January. It didn't get a lot of news. I don't know if it got lost in the shuffle about, you know, the March for Life, but they found that we often hear, Bill, that, well, we need to limit abortion and regulate abortion. We need to do these things so that we can have fewer abortions, right? We need to make it legal so we'll have fewer and safer ones.
Mm-hmm.
But what this study found is that every place that has legalized abortion, and this study encompassed 100 countries over a century, every place where abortion has been legalized, it proliferates. And so people who argue that, well, women have always had abortions, you know, that is true, going all the way back to the first century. But when governments and societies decide to protect the youngest members of the human family, abortions go down significantly. How does that work?
Yeah.
If you say you can't do it, fewer people do it.
Mm.
It's a really fascinating study and a really important one.
You know, in a more recent example, we can think of the legalization of marijuana in Colorado, and you look at what's happened with the explosion of use regarding that and the abuse and everything else. But let's get back to this new law in Arizona that would require an abortion provider to be able to carry out a live birth. What a novel idea.
Again, you know, when I look at some of the ways that abortion advocates oppose abortion restrictions, you know, the pro-life movement, some say it's that it doesn't go far enough. You're just restricting something. You're acknowledging some children are going to be killed and so on. But we've got to work incrementally as well as working to make abortion unthinkable overall. And yet when a law like this is passed in Arizona, which is just as you said, Bill, whoever's carrying out the procedure would have to be able to do a birth. In other words, they'd have to be an obstetrician or trained in obstetrics. Guess what? A lot of abortion providers aren't.
Mm-hmm.
And so when people oppose regulation like this, it always reminds me of Solomon, right? And the way the two women reacted to his judgment. When somebody objects to an abortion restriction, you can tell where their heart stands toward the child and toward the children. And they may say that, well, I'm trying to protect women's rights, but you cannot do that without cruelty and without violence to children in the ways that some of the people react to these laws. And I think it really exposes a lot in terms of, for us on the sidelines watching that and trying to discern, well, gee, is that right? Is this restrictive too, you know, is it making it too hard for a woman to get an abortion? You know, be wise. We need to be wise and take a look at everybody who's involved in that abortion.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you talk about the law requiring an abortion provider to be able to carry out a live birth, there have been many, many occasions where in the attempt to abort the child, they do get out of the birth canal and there's a little tiny sign of life. But because the intention was to abort, they will sometimes take this baby and put it somewhere until it stops breathing.
Yes, well, more actively take measures to complete the termination, is I think the terminology that they use. But Montana is working on that front, and they have mandated life-saving measures to babies who survive abortion attempts. They've also gone so far, Bill, as to say, look, if you show up at 6 months, why have you waited until the six-month mark? But mm-hmm. if you show up at 6 months pregnant and want an abortion, you're going to be required to have a cesarean birth so that that baby has a chance to live. You know, and so one of the opponents of the bill, of the measure, said, well, you're asking, you know, that doctor to be a miracle worker or, you know, some kind of a, well, yes, or don't do that.
Yeah, a human life is at stake.
Right. And so otherwise, we're if we want to legislate and legalize infanticide, you know, that's where that's going to go, because children do survive, Bill. You're right. We had Melissa Oden on Cradle My Heart Radio a week or two ago, Sunday nights, 8 o'clock we air. And, you know, she survived an attempt on a saline abortion where saline's injected into the uterus, and it took 5 days for her to be born. The procedure is supposed to bring about a stillbirth, but she survived. And it was only because a nurse broke hospital procedure and saved her life and found someone to adopt her that she's here today to tell the story. But there are over 100 people she's been helping who have survived abortion attempts. And you're right, the only right thing to do is to help these children and to not kill them.
Mm-hmm. There are some awfully disturbing things that are popping up in teen magazines. And one of the things that I saw in an article was a pro-abortion gift guide for teens and young women who have had abortions.
It's so over the top.
There's my breakfast coming up again.
And Bill, you know, here's a separate conversation for the two of us, but today's comedians, the female comedians, the Amy Schumers, mm-hmm. the Sarah Silvermans, I really believe they've contributed to this vulgar tone that's mm-hmm. out there for the next generation. Like vulgarity itself is supposed to be funny.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, the locker room we used to call it, you know, when we were kids. And it was generally guys who were engaging in that. But this, Teen Vogue put out this very, very vulgar, over-the-top gift guide. And it wasn't tongue-in-cheek. It was, if your friend had an abortion, here's how to help.
Mm-hmm.
So a homeschool teen, Amy, Autumn Lindsay is her name. She worked with Students for Life to put out a video that point by point went through and addressed the absurdity and, you know, the offensiveness of this Teen Vogue piece. And good for her. And her video went viral. I think she's got close to 1 million views.
Wow.
You can find it on Facebook. Just Google Autumn Lindsay. You know, and the Media Research Council looked into this, Bill, and they found Teen Vogue has been selling abortion to their teen readers through various articles 63 times so far this year. You know, this is a huge teachable moment for parents. If your daughter is reading Teen Vogue, you need to sit down and counteract the brainwashing
mm-hmm.
and talk with her about, you know, what the truth is. And I really applaud Autumn Lindsay for saying, look, if you have a friend who's had an abortion, she needs love, she needs compassion, she needs to be, you know, handled with care because she's grieving. There's been a loss of life here.
Mm-hmm.
This is the one thing Teen Vogue didn't tell their young readers.
Yeah. All right, Kim, we're going to take a little break. When we come back, more from Kim Cotola from Cradle My Heart Radio. It's 46 minutes after the hour. Thanks for being with us this morning. We'll be right back. Kim Cotola on the line this morning from Cradle My Heart Radio. We always talk about pro-life stuff. Bill Arnold here. And right before we went to break, we were talking about this horrendous thing that a teen magazine gifts to give your friend after they have had an abortion. And Kim, I read through what the gifts were, and I will not repeat any of them. They're so offensive.
You know, and this is why I really applaud Autumn Lindsay taking it on, because she went point by point and just said, you're wrong, you're wrong, you're wrong, you're wrong. This is not where young girls and teens need to be going. I mean, the tamest thing that they offered was a girl power hat, you know, and she said the idea that abortion empowers anyone is a fantasy, and it's a lie. Abortion diminishes women. Abortion kills children and diminishes women. It can never empower us. And as somebody who chose abortion in my 20s to try to protect a career, you know, a lot of women, Bill, the idea that we're out there choosing and marching for our rights is just not fit with the average woman. The average woman gets an abortion as an act of self-preservation. And that's what I did. But another way of saying that is, right, choosing self over an innocent child. And so you've got to live with that. You've got to live with, I built my future on the death of a child. That is not empowering.
Boy.
And coming to grips with that, all we have is Jesus Christ to help us overcome something like that, right? That's
mm-hmm.
all we have, Bill.
Yeah.
You know, and so he empowers us to be new and to be restored. And to, you know, that's why I'm here, is to tell people who are languishing in that horrible pit that abortion throws us into, if we're honest with ourselves. You know, I'm here to say Jesus comes to lift us out of all of that.
Mm-hmm.
But the idea that we could do that and be empowered to march forth into our careers and our education and wherever it is, you know, our future, we think our future dreams are going to take us. No, abortion diminishes us as women,
mm-hmm.
and it destroys the next generation. And faith in Jesus Christ can redeem all of it, but don't buy the lie. It is not an empowering choice.
Mm-hmm. Lindsay said in this video that in order to try to help a friend recover from an abortion, sit with her in her grief, pray for her, remind her of God's redemption, and comfort her in her suffering. Offer your friendship and help her find healing. Instead of treating an abortion like a stigmatized medical procedure that is actually completely harmless and ethical, Lindsay encourages teens to treat it like a terrible loss, because it is. And remind our listeners again where they can see that Google that video. Lindsay, what's her last name?
Her name is Autumn Lindsay.
Autumn Lindsay, that's right.
And Students for Life worked with her, and they also put out a very short video for healing after abortion. Like, here's a better answer, Teen Vogue.
Yeah.
And we've got that linked on my Facebook page, at Cradle My Heart is how you find us on Facebook. And, yeah, I'm so proud of her, and I'm so proud of everybody at Students for Life who, wow, I mean, they're standing down with, you know, standing up to their peers and standing on God's love and on the truth and trying to influence the culture for life. And if we think it's hard at our age, how much harder for many of their peers who don't know the Lord, who don't have a Christian worldview or any even a vestige of it from their childhood, they really need our prayers.
Mm-hmm. Kim, what's going on in Guatemala? This is an interesting story. I'll let you tell it.
Well, Guatemala, like most of South America, outlaws abortion.
Mm-hmm.
They're countries where abortion is banned, except to save the life of the mother.
Mm-hmm.
And so Women on Waves, a Dutch abortion ship, sailed over and tried to, invite women, entice women to come on board and get an abortion. And Guatemala said, no, we're not going to let you disembark, and we're not going to let women on the boat. You know, because Women on Waves' tactic is to go where countries outlaw abortion, you know, take women out into international waters and give them the abortion that they say they need.
Mm-hmm.
And Guatemala said no. And it's an interesting case because, again, you know, Women on Waves is saying that they're helping women with a fundamental right to abortion.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, of course, South America was under threat of the Zika virus, which was thought to have caused birth defects. But, you know, we're having to reexamine that story too, Bill, that all of the dire predictions have yet to really be fully realized. There have been some cases of microcephaly and encephaly, but Zika virus is not the public health crisis that it was thought to be initially. And so the idea that, oh, okay, well, Zika virus means, yep, we need abortion. That's how we're going to have a good future. No, what we need is to put our human ingenuity at work to come up with, you know, a way to combat the Zika crisis that doesn't involve killing children.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty simple.
Yeah. Kim, what is the headlines duel over the pro-life organization, the Save the Storks? What is that story?
Well, Save the Storks is offering mobile pregnancy units to pregnancy help centers. And they're street legal, so they can be parked right outside an abortion business. And what they do is just that, or they take them, you know, someplace where women gather. And if a woman is obviously pregnant, they say, would you like to see an ultrasound of your baby? And they have radiologists on staff working in the vans. And the first time that the founder of the organization encountered a woman who did that, she was on her way to an abortion appointment, and after she saw the ultrasound, she came out of the van and said she was calling her mom to let her know she was going to be a grandmother. I mean, it changed her mind and changed her life. So they took their van to CPAC, the conservative PAC mm-hmm. gathering that got a lot of news attention last week, and they were in the exhibit area, and so reporters were there that were pro-life and pro-abortion, and it was really fascinating seeing how the two different sides of the media covered the story. I mean, all you have to do is take a look at the headlines, right? So Jezebel, which I don't recommend people visit, it's a really vulgar, really vile website. But Jezebel covered Save the Storks Van, and so did, I think, The Blaze.
Mm-hmm.
So The Blaze said, pro-life group Save the Storks uses van to bring ultrasounds right to the women who need them. That's a description of the story, right?
Sounds that way, yeah.
That's pretty true. So Jezebel says, inside the Save the Storks anti-abortion van that offers prayer to desperate pregnant women.
That's a little different spin, so, isn't it?
That's all we're doing, mm-hmm. Bill. We're just clueless Christians just standing around with our hands folded. You know, I mean, not that there's anything wrong with prayer. Please understand that, you know, our nation needs revival, Bill. That's how abortion is going to come to an end. We need to pray, and I'm participating in the 40 Days for Life prayer initiative that's happening right now. But, wow, that headline and the way the story was spun, and now over 400 comments. And, you know, they're all, most of them are mocking Jesus, mocking prayer, mocking the idea that a pregnant woman, you know, as if we're all we're saying is, I'll pray for you,
yeah,
and sending them away, you know, in their crisis. And it couldn't have been more slanted and more deceptive and dishonest for Jezebel to tell the story the way that they did. But, you know, maybe all PR is good PR. Maybe,
yeah,
someone reading that article on that website will seek out the help that she needs.
Yeah, Kim, thanks for bringing difficult news so eloquently to the listeners. Appreciate you very much. Have a great day. It's 57
good.
Minutes after the hour. We'll be back in just a minute. Psalm 73, whom have I in heaven but you? And earth has nothing I desire besides you. My flesh and my heart may fail, but God is the strength of my heart and my portion forever. Loving that verse today. We'll be back with more Faith Radio Mornings in just a minute.
Thank you for listening to this conversation from Faith Radio Mornings. These podcasts are available because of listener support. You can make your gift now at myfaithradio.com. And thanks for sharing this audio link with a friend and growing the impact of Faith Radio Mornings. Also, take a moment to subscribe to this podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player and never miss a show.